Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/coldslither. Over 150,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Once again, that's audibletrial.com/coldslither.
The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network.
Another exciting episode of the Click Nation Comic Book Chronicles, episode 100.
Yeah!
Pomp and what do you call it? Pomp and
circumstance.
I'm your host, Tim DOGG. And tonight we have all the gang here. We've got at PCN underscore dirt on Twitter.
Yay! Hi, guys.
Check out his website, popculturenetwork.com. Also got the man behind the sound effects, at agent underscore 70 on Twitter.
What's up, everybody? I do more than just sound effects, damn it.
But that's what we rely on you for. And we also have at Roddy Cat on Twitter.
Happy New Year, everybody. Four Horsemen are back.
Make sure to go to the website, theclicknation.com, where you can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and comic book reviews. Follow the Twitter account at TheClickNation. Like the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/TheClickNation. Add us to your circles on Google Plus. Just search for TheClickNation. And like the Google Plus page, because I have now linked it to the youtube.com/TheClickNation YouTube channel.
Yay!
Subscribe also on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Give us nice 5-star reviews on iTunes. Give us a thumbs up on Stitcher. We share the shows. We are also a part of the Cold Slither Podcasting Network. Just go to coldslitherpodcast.com. We're also on the Comic Related Podcasting Network, comicrelated.com. We record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, except for holidays. At least the major holidays.
That's right. In New York, if you have to move your car, if you don't have to move your car, we probably won't be podcasting. We won't be broadcasting.
And make sure to use the hashtag Comic Chronicles on your favorite social media websites.
There you go.
So this will mostly be an episode where we do a 2014 year in review, where we give our answers to most disappointing comics or most surprising or satisfying variant covers, comic events, favorite artists, writers, etc., etc. Should we start with that or should we do news? I guess we should do news first, shouldn't we?
Yeah, we'll do news first.
Sure.
We're basically covering 2 weeks worth of news, so.
Yeah. Let me click that tab here. Let's see. Now, so while I do that, I'll try to share the Comic Book Chronicles 100th episode spreadsheet on the video here to see if it actually shows up for people that end up watching live or on repeat. But the first story is Hawkeye going to appear on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? And I'm assuming this is something that Josh Whedon teased at some point.
I think there was speculation or something. It wasn't. It was Jeremy Renner. He was asked on an AMA, which is the Ask Me Anything on Reddit, whether Hawkeye had a chance of appearing on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. He said, yeah, maybe. Why? Because I can sit here and quote him, says, I guess. Again, those questions are tough to really answer because it's above my pay grade, ha ha, blah, blah, blah. And he goes on and on and on.
Nice.
And he talks about how the show's good and Clark Gregg and da-da-da. So, yeah.
Constantine is set to return a return date and changes its time slot.
Yeah.
Anyone?
Yeah.
No one's actually watching Constantine,
well,
right?
Well, not on the show.
I'm watching it.
Not here. Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, the show's good. The 10 o'clock time slot is probably not as much of the problem as much as it's not in a position. I mean, the day's probably something, but the show's not bad. It's just that, well, I think it could probably serve itself a little bit better on a cable show because of how it is, but it does it for what time it comes on a network. It does what it needs to.
Honestly, okay. That's the type of show that freaks out my wife, so I'm not allowed to watch it while she's awake. So I figure it's just one of those things that I'd catch on Netflix, you know, down the line, just watch it all late at night. Because that's what I did with Hannibal. That's what I do with Dexter. You know, it's just one of those shows.
Is that what you do with The Walking Dead?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I don't watch Walking Dead on Netflix. I'll watch that video on demand.
Right.
I'm kidding.
But you don't watch it together.
But no, she won't watch those types of shows.
I gotcha.
It's kind of like 10 o'clock.
Shout out to Mrs. Dirt, who's not a fan of the bloody gore and the mystic.
Yeah.
Wait, actually, 10 o'clock
on a Friday. Was that?
Oh, no. Go ahead.
No, I was about to say 10 o'clock on a Friday is not a good night for TV in a lot of cases anyway. So. That was all I was going to say.
Yeah, that's always been a tough time slot. X-Files and Millennium used to be Friday night shows, and that was always tough for them to find an audience on Friday night, just because Friday night, you know, the people who tend to watch those shows on a Friday night are out doing things, and that's not the best time for them. You know, that's a time for TGI Friday sitcoms for all the people with kids that are home, you know, by themselves. It's not really the best time for genre shows.
True enough.
Well, I tried to add the spreadsheet, but it's giving me an error message, so I'm assuming it's probably something having to do with the sheet being editable or something or another.
Well, at least I'm showing a bunch of people viewing it anonymously.
Well, yeah, I'll put the link out on Twitter, so that's probably...
Oh, we have a chameleon, we have a beaver, we have an armadillo.
And they will probably disappear in a minute, so...
That's funny. We have 29 total viewers. That's crazy.
The bots have gotten to it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, the next story is Marvel cast Mike Coulter as Luke Cage.
Cool.
So that casting
glad
is
glad to hear it.
Out of the way.
I don't know who that is.
I don't know who it is either. He's been in...
I think he was on Scandal or something.
There's another show.
No, here we go. American Horror Story, Men in Black 3, Salt.
Yeah, I haven't watched any of those. So
yeah.
I mean, I don't recognize him offhand, but you know, just based on the look, he fits it.
Yeah.
Guardians of the Galaxy to finish 2014 as the top grossing film in the U.S. Congrats to them and Marvel Studios.
Wow. If there were odds on betting on that, can you imagine what the odds were on betting for that? You know, what the line would be? I sound like, you know, Bill Simmons and Cousin Sal sitting on the line. Can you imagine betting money on that at the beginning of the year that Guardians would be the highest grossing movie of the year? How much money we would have all won?
Yeah.
Mm-mm. Crazy.
I know.
Just a bad year for movies.
Jesus. Really.
Yeah.
Vin Diesel teases Inhumans involvement.
Yes, I saw this. This was pretty cool. Like, he took a fan-made image and tweeted it, and you gotta love it when the stars do that. And we all know that Diesel's kind of he's already done it before with Groot, where he's already, you know, he kind of spoils things long before he's allowed to say anything about it. So You know, that's pretty cool. Well, what do you guys think of that?
That's pretty cool. I mean, you know, and for what he's teasing, I'm like, sure, I'm down.
Yeah.
That's kind of what people were speculating anyway.
Except he'll have to grow hair because Black Bolt actually has hair under his mask.
Yeah, but he doesn't have, I don't think Vin Diesel would have a problem being standing under the mask. I don't think.
So, I mean, how many times would they actually pull the mask off?
Right.
I guess, you know, they could.
I mean, well, in a movie they would, but, I mean, this is...
Right.
In the books, that's rarely ever happened.
Right.
Sam Raimi is like the rest of us. He's not a fan of Spider-Man 3 either.
I actually not seen that one.
Avengers 2 art reveals Ultron's new origin story. So if you're trying to stay away from spoilers, I suggest not to read those cast cards. As they give small little details away.
Stay away.
There's an article about how to make a chronologically correct Marvel Cinematic Universe omnibus.
Didn't somebody put this together already?
Yeah, I saw something like a video.
Yeah.
This might be the same thing.
It takes like 10 hours to watch or something ridiculous like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the same thing.
So get to watching, people.
It's like, man, if you've already missed out, you got 10 hours at least ahead of you.
Hey, that's a pretty good marathon.
Seriously. All right, what else we got here?
MarvelKids.com launches Avengers Destination.
Oh, that's got to be ahead of the movie. That's a good idea.
Mark Doyle, the Batman editor, promises Batman comic for every fan. That was a good article.
Basically, really?
He talked about his time as taking over the Bat Books and what his game plan was, how to bring a lot of diversity to the different books.
Well, and that was something that they tried to do, I remember, at one point in the past, where they would talk about, you know, Detective is the book where he's actually solving mysteries.
Mm-hmm.
And Superman Batman is the one where he's using all the crazy sci-fi stuff to hang with Superman, who's super, you know, powered. And the Batman book was the one that was dark and scary. And, you know, they were trying to break things up. So if there was a particular way you liked Batman, mm-hmm. then it would fit. They did the same thing with Superman, where they made Action Comics the one that was all, you know, punching and fighting giant robots and stuff like that.
Dark Knight was supposed to be the horror book, right?
Yeah. Every so often they just get this idea of, like, they need to do a villain-focused book, or they need to do, you know, one that's more about the family, about Alfred and Robin and all that stuff. And, you know, they try playing around with these different things until they find something that works. I always like the idea. I think it's a good idea, even though I grew up in the era where all the Superman books were related and it was one, you know, giant storyline going from week to week to week. I thought that was really cool, but now weekly comics are back to a thing that DC does regularly anyway. So taking your family books and kind of breaking the character apart, so if you like one version of the character more than another, then there's a book for you. I think that just makes sense, especially with so many books out there that they're doing with the same characters over and over.
Always, I'm a fan of that. More options is never a bad thing.
So good on you, Doyle.
All right, cool.
Could we see the return of Damage Control?
I hope so.
Didn't know they went away. Didn't really know that they were around that much either.
They used to be more prominent, like, back in the, 90s, I guess. They would have, like, little miniseries every now and then, or, you know, whenever an event come around, you would see them pop up, like, you know, in the background or something.
Well, I remember they did I think it was a 4-issue miniseries for Damage Control back in the 90s.
Yep.
And to promote it, they actually sent out business cards. So you went to your local comic book shop, and there's a stack of Damage Control business cards sitting on the counter. I thought that was really cool. That was a great way of doing it.
Yeah, I remember getting one of those, and I know I don't have it now, but...
I might have one in a box somewhere.
Yeah.
Next story, and the past guest on the Comic Chronicles, Avengers Millennium by Mike Costa, Jeffo, and Marvel in 2015. That's a first, a digital first series that will go to print. I actually just read the article about this before the show. I was browsing around Bleeding Cool and saw the article, so that'll be something to look forward to.
Cool.
There's a bunch of Uncanny Avenger teasers for the relaunch where one character teases where they give like little phrases or statements.
Yeah. I don't like one of those costumes.
What was that?
I said, I don't like one of those costumes.
Hmm. What don't you like about it?
It looks, well, it looks dumb. Just plain and simple. That Quicksilver just looks dumb. Wow. And maybe it's because I'm kind of used to the old dumb, well, not the old dumb one, but the old one. But I don't know. That one just looks stupid. And
Quicksilver's costume to me just looks like one of those Tron suits.
Yeah.
Tron Legacy movie.
Yeah.
Which I mean, awesome. I'm okay with that. You know,
yeah. Speaking. But for him, for that, it's like, yeah. Hmm.
All right. Stan Lee Media loses yet another bid for Marvel characters.
Wah, wah, wah.
Yeah, go figure, right?
I'm not entirely sure what that's about.
Stan Lee Media just needs to stop suing people. Because Stan Lee's not even affiliated with them anymore.
Yeah, I was going to say, Stan Lee's not part of that anymore anyway, so I need to let it go.
They're basically trying to get a piece of the pie and failing miserably. Thankfully.
What else we got? Marvel rolling continuity unwinds as the Fantastic Four did fight Galactus in 1966 after all.
Yeah, this is just some more, you know, like some books, I guess, some editorial slip-ups or maybe just, you know, letting things go and just realizing that it's never good to be precise about these things. This is all based off of some more time traveling in Uncanny X-Men and in last week's issue, and one of the newer X-Men, Ava Bell, I think is the name of the character. She has time traveling abilities and or time stopping abilities, and that's been transformed into time travel. And the bottom line is they sort of reestablish when the Fantastic Four fought Galactus, and it sort of glazes over when other things happened in Marvel continuity. But ultimately, we all know the sliding Marvel continuity is still in effect. You know, we've had this discussion before how, you know, based on the way current Marvel continuity is set up, Cap doesn't get thawed out until after 9/11. So, you know, ultimately, we're dealing with that. I think we're mostly okay with that, but, you know, it's kind of fun to see, you know, things happen the way we all sort of remember them, the way the fanboys remember them.
Okay. DC Comics confirms Shazam set in same movie universe as Batman versus Superman. The no-duh prize goes to people that were thinking otherwise. And finally, Hawkeye merch raises over $2,000 for anti-violence charity.
Nice.
Good on them.
Good job. Any variant covers that stick out to y'all that need mentioning?
Wait, there's 60 variant covers for Star Wars number one?
Yeah.
It's going to make over $1 million, right? Isn't that what they said?
In pre-orders, I believe, they said.
You have to be kidding me with this.
But to answer the question, go ahead.
I was going to say the Phil Noto is what you're about to bring up, right?
Yeah, I'm pulling it up right now.
So, I need to check out what some of those and see what they look like. So basically, to let people know, Phil Noto's stunning Marvel variant retro photo style covers were revealed.
And if you're watching the video, you can see me kind of slowly scroll through them.
Oh, wow. I like that Captain America one.
Yeah, that's I love that one. I got that one as my pretty cool. I got that on his Twitter, Abby.
I've got to get that physical copy. That's a great picture. Wow.
How do you have time to do all that while doing Black Widow?
Yeah, but they're one piece. You know, like, it's different than doing sequential art. That's the thing, you know?
I mean, it still takes time.
Yeah.
So are all those on the Comics Alliance website?
Yeah, they're basically called from all the other sites that had them because they were like Comic Brian and other sites had them, so they just kind of collected them.
Cool. I'll check that out after the show. Sure. And now I get to read our Amazon ad for Cold Slither Podcasting Network. Keep our podcast free by shopping at Amazon. Visit coldslitterpodcast.com, then click the Keep Our Podcast Free link at the top of the page. From there, scroll down and click on the Amazon link to shop. Purchase items from Amazon.com as you normally would, whether it's books, music, electronics, jewelry, apparel, etc. For every purchase made on Amazon through our link, Amazon sends the CSPN a payment that helps us keep the Comic Book Chronicles podcast free for our listeners at no extra cost to you. Amazon.com through coldslitterpodcast.com. Do it today.
And there you go.
As I close that tab. All right, let's see. Go back to the sheet. I guess we could talk about quickly books from the last 2 weeks. I actually didn't fill anything out. I did read a lot,
though. Yeah, I didn't fill anything in. I got to pull up a comics list from the previous week.
I guess we can
go ahead.
We can quickly just talk about them, then we can get into the 2014 year in review.
Yeah. Yep.
I haven't finished Loki Agent of Asgard number 9.
That was pretty good. But, was
yeah, right. As with some event series, the tie-in books are a lot better than the main series.
No. And this one tied between two books.
What's the other one?
I should say two. Well, they were both at the 8 and 9 of Axes.
Oh, yeah. They tied into, like, two different issues.
Yeah.
It was, like, an in-between issue.
Yeah. It's like it kind of starts in one and ends in another or something.
I enjoyed I enjoyed the stuff with Loki and Enchantress and Sigurd and Amora.
Yeah.
That took place.
I thought the bit with Odin was kind of interesting.
Yeah, Odin showing up and they thought they were taking them back to Asgardia to be punished by Freya, or however you say her name.
Freya. And the question that got brought up, because they asked him about where Freya was, and she was kind of waffled on that one, which was kind of interesting.
Yeah. I guess we can talk about Avengers and X-Men number 9, Axis, the conclusion.
It's over!
Yay!
Mercy.
Anything else need to be said about that?
The only thing you need to know is Havoc, Sabretooth, and Iron Man are the only ones that stayed inverted.
Oh, it's so awful. Oh, just awfulness.
And Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch may not be Magneto's children.
Nope, they already said, well, yeah, that's stupid.
I don't really care.
Yeah, you know, that's for you, Fox.
Yeah, pretty much. The thing with Sabretooth might be interesting, though. I don't know.
Oh, and Carnage isn't dead.
Which, yeah, like, nothing was... That was like, okay, he was gone 1 second, and then, hey, how you doing? Just out of nowhere. Like,
I will say the Nova 25 issue was pretty good. 25th issue, spectacular. Mm. He became a member of the Avengers. Kind of, sort of. I mean, he was, like, legit, but...
Who, Nova?
Yeah.
Oh. I thought he had already had, but okay.
Yeah. Everyone's an Avenger, so it's like, what's the big deal?
Yeah, kind
of. Another person. But for him, it was a big deal, because he, you know, he's a kid.
Yeah. Well, I'll bring up real quick, All New Invader 13. Wait, what happened to it? Oh, this is basically Malachi or whatever, the speedster from the Eternals and
Makari.
Makari, excuse me, thank you, and Tannereth. they meet up and have kind of having some secret meeting way out in the world on a chessboard way out in space, which kind of reminded me of a Conquest of Champions board. Almost made me excited. I'm not sure how much more of that we're going to get because since the book is ending, but it was all right.
I mean, what was great about this book, it's kind of an interlude issue, you know, where we have, you know, kind of a side story that's going to enhance, you know, how the book ends. What I loved about the chessboard is looking at some of the aliens that were depicted there. We know some of them we haven't seen in a long time, like the Dire Wraiths. You know, me as a ROM Space Knight fan, I'm like, Dire Wraiths!
Yeah.
You know, you see like classic Shi'ar, you see classic Brood, you see classic Skrulls and other aliens, and it's just really cool to see. You know, we've seen some attempts to introduce new cosmic races into the Marvel U, but it was nice to see, you know, some of the classics there on that chessboard.
Yeah, and I kind of wonder if it sounds like it is setting up something, but I wonder if it's setting up something that's going to come out in another book at some point.
Oh, so I need to read this, huh?
Right.
Well, and even for Tim, they even they reference New Warriors at one point.
Right. What I was going to say is, isn't Robinson still going to have a Marvel book coming out, even though these are going to get canceled? This and FF.
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. They say he's working on something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So then maybe Robinson really is setting something up with this. Maybe he's working on an Eternals book, because I was surprised to see Makari show up in here, and the Eternals have played a mild, you know, Icarus played a mild role, a small role in this Invaders book. So that's not
out of
a possibility. Yeah.
Yeah.
I could see that. A couple of months ago, I posed a question on Twitter asking people, what's the net, you know, after the breakout hit Guardians of the Galaxy, what's the next, like, kind of franchise that's ready for Marvel to bring from, you know, the back catalog,
yeah.
The back catalog, you know, besides Inhumans, because we knew that was coming.
So you're thinking Eternals?
And, yeah, Eternals was one of the answers I got, and that actually makes sense, because that's something they own, and I'm sure that Eternals have fans, but it's not like they're very popular right now.
Right, I mean, they've never even had, they haven't had a push in who knows how long. At least you could say that Guardians had, you know, they had that Abnett and Lanning led push in the mid 2000s, and, you know, they had a decent base of popularity. You know, granted, you know, the mainstream fan didn't have any idea who the Guardians were, but you know, with regards to Eternals, they've had even less of a stage presence than the humans did up until recently. So I wouldn't be surprised if they tried that.
And, hey, wonder if they'll give Robinson an event.
Oh, you never know.
Let's see what else. New Avengers is mostly more Avengers find each other. And we were introduced to the Mighty Avengers for, you know, in the future, which is basically the same team.
Okay.
They joined the fray.
Yeah, this is just so much fun. It's just like, yeah, let's just throw them all together. And you finally see Hickman's long game, you know, kind of weaving together, you know, like the different threads weaving together.
Yep.
Agent 7, did you read She-Hulk?
I did read She-Hulk.
I did not. What's the deal?
I don't want to spoil too much of it then. I'm still reading it.
Well,
it's basically a knockdown, drag-out fight between Titania. Magma shows up. No, not Magma. Volcana,
yes.
Because they have very similar looks and similar powers. They show up to try to take out She-Hulk because of this blue file. And we find out that the paralegal Angie and the monkey have powers.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I'm flipping through it right now. I'm trying to remember. I mean, I don't want to spoil the end. You should read it.
Skeeter.
Yes, and we are about to get Skeeter. That's funny. I still remember her from Secret War, mm-hmm. You know, Marvel Superhero Secret War.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think, is it the next issue that's the last issue?
Is it 15, I think.
Oh, okay. So I 12. Guess...
What issue was this?
13.
11.
Wait, what?
11. So I'm not sure how many more are left.
I think, it, how I many think it's going to 12. Health are? You know, just perfect for the two trades, right?
Well, that would make sense.
Right. Well, the next issue is called Final... You know, the teaser at the end of this book is Final Verdict. So that's what made me think the next issue is the last issue.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
So we'll see how that goes. But this is a fun issue. Let's see. What else came out last week? Robin Rises Alpha number 1.
Ooh, good memory.
No, I'm looking at the list.
So this was fun.
Yeah, that was a great book.
Yeah, I was surprised at how much I enjoyed this book. I really was.
I have a question. I thought Alpha came before Omega. Right?
They did it backwards.
Why'd they do it backwards?
Because he was dead and now he's alive.
Oh.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Those sly dogs.
Which, of course, will mess up anyone in like 5 years who goes back to read it.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. That's comedy. But yeah, I was surprised at how much I enjoyed this. It was just a fun, you know, because there's a lot of fighting in the Batcave. So...
And it's fun that Adam Kubert, Andy Kubert got to do the art on this since he was co-creator of Damian Wayne.
Yep.
I would say Andy.
Well, I was just going to say, plus Bat-Cow makes an appearance. And anytime Bat-Cow makes an appearance, the book is automatically a thumbs up.
He has a great appearance in this, too, if I recall. There is something, he does something pretty consequential to the story. That's
Bat Cow. And from I read an article or interview with Gleason and Kubert, and they were saying how like there are parts of this book that mirrored some earlier issues of Batman and Robin, I think. Like them at the graveside and Damian throwing the ball for the dog to go fetch. Long-time readers got some extra Easter eggs in there.
Moo. I just got to the page with Bat-Cow. That's funny. Oh, mercy.
Anything else from last week? Worst mentioned.
Let's see.
I don't have my iPad next to me, so I can't see what I read. Actually, I can look at the folder.
Mighty Avengers.
I read that. It was pretty fun.
Yeah.
Actually, a series I caught up with because of this nice holiday and the low number of books coming out, I caught up on a bunch of old stuff. And I caught up with Star Spangled War Stories featuring G.I. Zombie from DC. And this series is great. I mean, just the absurdity of the fact that there's a zombie who works for the U.S. government. You know, he can be shot, he can be decapitated, he can be, you know, whatever, and he'll eventually heal, you know, is great to begin with. But the fact is that he's part of this, you know, secret covert ops organization that is going in. They found, like, this supremacist group that has these rockets, and they're going to fire a biological weapon into these cities in order to turn everybody. It's some mutated form of rabies that make people almost like zombies themselves. And so he's going in as part of this secret undercover group to fight the supremacists and find out where they're getting their money and their weapons from. And so there's part of it is kind of the activity, the covert ops, the, you know, all of that type of stuff. But then on top of that, you have G.I. Zombie. So there's like the absurdity mixed into it. So you have these moments where you are watching guys in a firefight trying to make a run for it, trying to, you know, save the innocent people. And then it's followed up by, you know, G.I. Zombie runs out of bullets. He's like, well, what else am I supposed to do? And he just starts, you know, ripping guys' throats out with his teeth and eating their fingers off and, you know, doing whatever just to get out of it, you know, to survive to see another day. So it's a great action book. And then plus you've got all the great absurdity that comes with the fact that you've got a super soldier who's the living dead as part of the team. So it really is a lot of fun. It's worth reading.
Is that in DC continuity?
Yeah, it's the new 52.
Yeah. I was never sure. Gotta love it. Real quick, I'll bring up Death of Wolverine, Logan Legacy number 7 was the finale of that miniseries. And I believe it carries over to the end of the Weapon X project. Oh, yeah, Wolverine's number 1, but I guess also the Weapon X program finale. But yeah, it all will trickle over to Wolverine's. No one read Daredevil?
I did. It's an interesting story involving the Stuntmaster and someone who's purportedly the new Stuntmaster. The old Stuntmaster approaches Daredevil, you know, Matt Murdock and his civilian guys to start a lawsuit and to try to get whoever's purportedly the new Stuntmaster to stop using his name, you know. But you know, long story short, there is a twist, and it's an interesting twist. But right now, I'm not so sure Daredevil is finishing on the right note. There's just something off about the storyline right now. I find was it Tom Taylor? Is it Tom Taylor that's writing Superior Iron Man?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I find that the Superior Iron Man Daredevil that was in, you know, that was in last week's book was actually far more interesting than what Wade is writing right now. But okay. You know, that's it's kind of like a weird. It was a weird Daredevil week because when I read both of those, I was definitely far more interested in the Tom Taylor pen story than the Wade story. But I, like I said, I think it's a symptom of this book kind of winding down, or Wade winding down his run. He's trying to set up a big Owl storyline, if I recall correctly, to finish up the book.
And so that segues, run on the book. Segues over to Superior Iron Man number 3, which was out.
There you go. I was pleasantly surprised by this book.
Yeah, this is looking to be one of my favorite series going on so far, just because of how fun it is. Go figure, when you throw the Superior in the title and have your hero acting different than their personality usually is, it produces a fun book.
Okay.
And I'm liking the creative team. This is my first time I'm reading Tom Taylor, because I've never really read his, I think he was doing Earth 2 and Injustice.
Injustice, yeah.
Right.
You know, I think I bought the first volume of Injustice during one of the holiday sales. Need to look, see what I did buy.
Well, this is like the top-selling digital comic of all time. Mm-hmm. So,
need to give it a read.
Yeah, it was good.
All right. Uncanny X-Men number 29. Cyclops is still fooling around with Matthew Malloy, I think his name is.
Right.
He's the.
Right. I was talking about that time travel stuff.
Oh yeah, a lot of that in here. So, and I actually forgot that the training that Ilyana was doing with Doctor Strange involved time travel.
Well, no, I think what she, you know, what I was going to say is I think what she was training with Strange was really for magic, but I think she stepped back in time to a previous version of Strange, because the current version of Strange is Illuminati-ish and on the run, so.
Oh, okay.
You know, depending, you know, it's tough to understand what's going on where with, you know, with the Hickman mumbo jumbo long form story interacting with Bendis' story, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's hard to figure out where Strange fits in all this. That's why they just conveniently made it made her go back in time to visit a previous version.
Yeah, I was gonna say they just had Doctor Strange in New Avengers a couple issues back, where he was in the space in between the space.
Right.
With the people who speak in sounds.
Right.
Right.
And the only major thing from this week was S.H.I.E.L.D. number 1.
Yes.
Anyone to read?
Yeah, I read. I shouldn't say dog, but
I liked it.
I did too. It was just
a little disjointed.
Yeah,
it was a little disjointed. It was kind of on the tough side. It was kind of a tough read. You know, in certain parts, it seemed like we jumped from panel to panel sometimes with no, you know, with very little.
Reasoning.
Sometimes the panels weren't very connected.
Yeah.
Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's accurate.
Okay.
So basically, what happens is this is pretty much a rundown of Coulson's character, from him being a kid to his whatever position he has now in the 616, which is not the one from the movie. Well, excuse me, which is pretty much not TV Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and it's not, as far as I know, Secret Avengers Coulson either. So this is kind of a hybrid where he's basically like a walking handbook of Marvel Universe in this case. So he's pretty much working. He has his own team, and the team is the same team. Well, roughly the same team from the show, minus Ward Sky. At this point, and Sky. Yeah. So you got Gemma and Fitz there, and a couple of Avengers or other heroes that happen to pop in, you know, for whatever mission is necessary, at least at this point.
I caught Mark Waid's Twitter feed earlier today, and I guess he was showing off like how he was basically his younger self was the version of Agent Coulson, where he had like ID cards or index cards for all like DC characters and so forth.
Right, so I guess there must be a little bit of him in there, because basically you even see in the story, you know, you see him as a kid reading comic books, and then him in like college or whatever watching the TV and writing down notes on the heroes or whoever's fighting, and then you just cut to like him being in prison for, I'm not sure where that part was going, him being and S.H.I.E.L.D. coming to get him out. Not in prison, but he was, I guess he got caught.
So are they forgetting how he was, like, introduced in the battle scars?
None of that is, no Nick Fury Jr., none of that has been said. It basically jumps through all of that, and then Ben Grimm's poker game, like, right after that, where he gets the position where presumably he has now. And it's, I think it's supposed to be set around now, because you see, like, Superior Spider-Man, you see Sam's Cap, and you know, what have you.
The time frame was
kind of weird about that until I saw that panel.
You know, we know that Sky is really Daisy Johnson.
Yes.
I wonder if Ward is supposed to be another character in, like, Marvel comic book continuity.
There was an article on that, wasn't there? Online recently, how there may be a setup for making him the Taskmaster. On the TV show?
That would be actually be interesting. But I hadn't seen that article, so I don't know. But yeah, like Daisy Johnson does show up, but Maria Hill does, you know, at one point. And that's pretty much all it is. This is basically, they're just folding them a version of the team. Because even, like I said, the version of the team is not even the same from the show that you get.
And I just felt it was one of those.
That much introduced all that much. They're just like, hey, they pop up and you see the names, but you don't really get too much else about them.
I just figured it was one of those good kind of crossover type things. If you're a fan of the TV show, you walk into a comic shop and you see that and you decide to try it out, you know, it'd be a little bit different but familiar enough that people who like the show will go along with it. And people who, you know, are fans of the Marvel Universe but haven't really, you know, been around a lot in the last couple of years, can pick it up and enjoy it, and it'll be fine.
Yeah, but if you're expecting to be the people from the show, it's not that.
Right.
Gotcha. All right.
Okay.
I think we covered all the books, right?
I think we did.
Mm-hmm.
It's time for the 2014 year in review. So I'll go down just the list here, giving each category and our responses to each. Are we ready?
Let's roll.
Most disappointing relaunch. Who would like to start with their answer?
Well, I don't really have one, so
Are you still filling in? We'll give you time. I'll give you time.
Well, no. I mean, I couldn't, for the life of me, I couldn't think of
the most. Got some interesting choices here. I can start off, I guess.
Go ahead.
Mine was all new Ultimates.
Understand.
Yeah, I could agree with that one as well, yeah.
It took me a long time to think of that. I'd like go through my list of stuff I used to read, and I was like, oh yeah, definitely that one.
Understandable. Mine for this is Hulk, because it is definitely on the chopping block of my own personal pull list. I'm just not very enthusiastic about where the story is going. I thought I would like, you know, the whole Armor Wars style Hulk story, and it's just not that engaging right now. So, you know, it's on the chopping block. It's very, very, you know, it's very close to getting chopped. So Hulk is mine. Most disappointing relaunch of 2014.
Well, I'm going to draw the ire of millions of fanboys out there, but my most disappointing relaunch this year was Batgirl. Even though it's a soft relaunch, they changed her outfit. They got a whole new art style. They completely moved her to a new location, gave her a whole new supporting cast. You know, it's like one of those things on the sitcom where someone has to move to the new town and they get all new actors that surround them, and it just can't save the show. And that's what I feel with Batgirl. It's just, I wanted to like it so much, and I just hate all the characters. The costume looks stupid. The storylines, somehow, even though she's the same age she was before, now that she's living in this apartment with other people, somehow she's regressed like 10 years in her attitudes and her maturity. And
I love it.
It's just terrible.
That's awful. So glad I'm not reading that.
Yep. All right. Most disappointing event.
One thing I want to note before we actually get into this list is that all of these disappointing events are Marvel events, I'm noticing here.
Well, DC didn't really have events.
You could have very easily put Doomed on here.
Yeah.
You had Forever Evil.
I was thinking Forever Evil.
Wait, was Forever Evil 2014 all only, or was it mostly, or was it part 2013?
I think it was part, wasn't it?
Yeah, it went.
It was so long.
13 to 14, it crossed. Yeah.
Oh, you know what? Let me add Forever Evil on there.
I've got too many.
I'm a triumvirate.
You've already got two on there now.
I know. I have a triumvirate. Damn it.
What was Gothtopia?
Gothtopia was the one where everybody woke up and Gotham City was clean and it was perfect, and Batman had a white suit and he was married to Catwoman, and everybody was just living the wonderful life of the dream. And then they found out that everyone was actually being drugged. And as they were walking down the street, seeing how nice and beautiful everything is, in reality, everything was dirty and infested and overgrown. The thing is, I don't remember who did it and what the point was. It was,
I remember it was like the comics and
right.
Batgirl. Yeah. I can't remember if Batgirl was in there or not. Catwoman, Batwing. Yeah, I barely remember it.
Goodness.
But the thing with it, though, is that it wasn't that big of a deal. It was more of just really, it wasn't an event so much as it was just kind of a crossover thing they did with the books. They didn't hype it as being a huge, gigantic thing, so it didn't disappoint like a huge, gigantic thing. It just was a thing that it was. And it wasn't that big of a deal one way or another. As opposed to what I put down as my most disappointing event was Original Sin, which with the way they hyped that, with the way that they bought ads for it, with the way that they tried to use it as one of those things that, oh, people are going to flock to comic book stores. This is going to be the big thing. This is going to change everything forever. And then when you got done with it, you're just like, all right, this was stupid. We killed the Watcher. Captain America's old. Thor can't pick up his hammer. Who cares?
Yeah.
What's funny is that, you know, after the triumvirate of my most disappointing events, Original Sin actually comes in fourth. Isn't that funny? Comes in fourth. So I said, or at least without putting them in any particular order, but, you know, I guess it could all be tied for worst or 1, 2, 3, and, you know, 1, 2, and 3. I have Avengers and X-Men Axis. I have Death Wolverine and Forever Evil.
Just, yeah, now.
It was just a really, really bad year for events. And, you know, if anything, I'm more than willing to have, like, at least one event sort of cleanse the palate. And honestly, I can see a Marvel event that sort of does a soft or medium or just a hard reboot, you know, to cleanse the palate of what's been happening in the last year and a half of Marvel events. You know, I can go on and on about what disappointed me about each one, but I think if you just go through the show archives, you'll hear me rant on and on about what I didn't like about these particular stories.
Oh, wait, I'm going to change my answer. Sorry.
Okay.
What?
I just remember what that one was about. So I was going to say originally, I was going to say Original Sin, you know, kind of Green Ranger guy. There were a couple of things in it that, I mean, sure, it made new stories and, you know, blah, 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 yakety schmackety. But there was really no real payoff off of the, outside of a couple of few books in here. But the one I'm going to bring up is Revolutionary War, which none of you read. I know this.
Was that the British stuff?
That was, yes, where they brought back like Death's Head and Union Jack and all those other ones. Like, it really, there was no purpose to it. It was a kind of a crazy read, you know, especially if you have the familiarity with, you know, those characters. But outside of that, there was really, it was just a bunch of one-off books that just were really loosely tied and had no real payoff.
Mine is Avengers and X-Men Axis. Enough said. If you've been watching the show.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah. Yeah, it had such a... and the premise was so good. I mean, it was good enough to be interesting. It just is not really coming out to anything.
I gave up on Axis the moment I saw Onslaught. And that was like, what, the first issue? And I was like, you brought back Onslaught? I'm out.
Give up. Oh, come on.
But, you know, seriously, I've pretty much had it with Avengers and X-Men crossing over. Please stop. Please, please stop.
All right. Most disappointing genre movie.
I see we had a 3 out of 4 here.
Yeah, I'm the only dissenting view here.
You might have been
the only one that watched that particular movie. I never even gave that movie a chance.
Yeah, I went with Sin City, A Dame to Kill For, which it was one of those too little, too late sequels. It was a sequel that didn't really add anything. If they had done it, you know, the next year after the first one, it probably would have been fine.
How long was it?
The fact that they let so much time pass before they went back to it, and they just didn't. There was no reason.
Was it more than 5 years dirt between the two movies? Was it more than five?
Yeah, I think so. I think
so. Yeah, so you can't let 5 years lapse. That's just way too long.
Let's see. When's the first movie? 2005.
Yeah, you see, you can't let more than 5 years lapse because it's out of sight, out of mind at that point.
Yeah. And then the rest of us went with Amazing Spider-Man 2.
I've been
Which,
on
honestly,
ground.
You know, I have to say, I saw that movie with my son, and it was perfect for him.
Mm.
You know, I mean, if you're maybe as, you know, 30 plus year olds, it's not the greatest movie, but for an 8 year old, it was the movie it needed to be. And it was, you know, there.
What's funny is that I got a review from a niece, you know, who's, how old is she now? She's like freshman in high school. And all she could talk about was it was so sad that, you know, no spoiler alerts, damn it, Gwen Stacy dies. You know, that's all she could go on about. And I kept asking her, so, well, what did you think of Electro? She was like, you know, to me that was the worst part. Exactly. I tried to have like a real conversation, but sort of like what Dirt said, well, you know, if you're of a certain age or a certain sensibility, the movie's okay. But it was just very disappointing for the majority of us, so.
Yeah.
The only thing he complained about, the only, for an 8-year-old, the biggest problem with the movie is there was too much kissing. between Peter and Gwen. And if he could have changed one thing, that would have been the one thing. But otherwise, he was fine with it.
That's funny.
Category number four, most disappointing book.
I throw out Original Sin. Enough said.
And that was a cheat because that was the event book.
Yeah. But like I said, that was my fourth, you know, worst event book.
It was very, you were very disappointed with Original Sin.
Mm.
Basically what the answer is.
Yep. You know, I went with Multiversity from Grant Morrison in DC, and that's just because I love parallel Earths, and I love the traveling from the different version of Earth to a different version of Earth. But the way he's done it, it's so thick, it's so dense, it's so obscure. You have to, and a lot of the ways he does it, I hate the characters.
Yeah,
you need an encyclopedia.
He has an appendix, doesn't he?
You have to go to Wikipedia to figure out who some of these people are and why they matter, and he decides of all the things he's going to do, he's going to go to the Earth where everybody's taking selfies of themselves and stuck up versions of the characters, and they're all in the tabloids. And it's like, who cares? You know, the only one out of all of these books that I actually liked was the one that was set in Thunderworld with Shazam. And his crew, and that's because it read like one of those old Shazam comics. And so I was fine with that one, but the rest of the series has just been a huge disappointment for me.
I did read the Thunderworld Adventures book over the holiday.
Did you like it?
I liked the art. I'll admit, I read 3/4 of it. And then the last quarter, I just stopped reading and just started just like flipping just to look at the scenes. I mean, someone that isn't familiar with Shazam and his cast of characters and world and everything else set up in this multiversity, multiple Earths or whatever they're doing, it was just flying over my head.
Yeah, and again, that kind of goes back to the whole problem with the series in general.
Okay. Mine was X-Force, just because I've always been a fan of X-Force, and I was enjoying Cable and X-Force, not so much Uncanny X-Force, but then when Cy Spurrier took it over, I just lost interest, and I thought I was a fan of that artist whose name I'm not going to try to pronounce, but everyone just looked so stiff and mannequin-ish. Mm-hmm. I just had to let it go, and I'm surprised it's still around. The book, I mean.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going with, and not because it was a generally disappointing book, it's because there could have been so much more done with it. Iron Patriot. Yeah. Because I don't even know how it ended. That's how bad it is. But it could have made a pretty good ongoing, I thought. One, they would have gotten away from Iron Patriot part, and, you know, two, they could have just explored Rhodey's, you know, like have Rhodey doing some stuff more. So, and then I got Satellite Sam because while I started reading that book, I couldn't really get. there was potential there that I've still.
What happened with that book? You were kind of big into that book.
Well, in the beginning, because the premise of it was pretty good. It was just that the art was kind of not doing it for me, and I kind of just lapsed off of it realistically because
was
I was
Chicken still on that.
Last I checked, yes.
Oh, okay, and you just weren't. He wasn't.
Probably not coming out regularly either for you.
Probably, I can't remember the last one I got. I bought. So I don't know. It might have picked the story, might have picked up, and I could have gotten through the art maybe, but it just wasn't really working. So
okay. Next category. Where are you? Worst gimmick or variant cover?
Deadpool covers.
Which Deadpool?
I like those Deadpool covers.
Any of them?
All of them.
Yes.
I like the ones where he's. It looks like the regular cover, but he's kind of popping his head in and he's doing some sort of dig at the book. Oh my gosh! Everything's going to change forever. Really?
Yeah. I like those covers. Listen, the ones that I hate are the ones that, we're trying to be positive. We're trying to send good messages, right? I hated those Marvel anti-bullying covers. They were awful. Awful, 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 awful.
You big
Every
bully.
Time I saw one on the shelf, I was flipping past to get to the regular cover.
You wanted to punch a nerd every time you saw one of those anti-bullying
covers? Wait, we need it. We need it.
I just hate the Image floor display variants. It's something big that Image has pushed that only select stores can get these variants. And we're one of them. We got them, but it took us forever when they first came in to realize what makes them a variant because they look exactly the same. They just have a different Image logo.
Oh, I remember you were telling us about
that. Instead of it just being the Image eye, it's the Image eye in a circle with a bunch of stars around it. But otherwise, it's 100% identical.
Okay.
Goodness gracious. Yeah. I remember that. I remember you went through the entire description. I think you even put up an image of it, and we were just like, get out of here. Seriously?
Yeah, flipping back and forth. Yeah. And they made a big deal. Like, these are special variants that only limited amount of stores are going to be able to get. So we signed up for them, and they're just stupid.
And I don't really do gimmick or variant covers, so I just left it blank because I wouldn't be able to name one.
This podcast is being sponsored by MyComicShop.com. Come visit us at ColdSlitherPodcast.com and then click on the link through our front page to MyComicShop.com. Shop there and keep the podcast going free. And you'll get new releases of comic books delivered right to your door. MyComicShop.com through ColdSlitherPodcast.com. Do it today.
Hey y'all, do you love us? Do you want to keep listening to us for free?
Help keep the Good and Terrible Show free by including the Cold Slither Podcast Network in your online shopping routine.
Visit coldslitherpodcast.com, click the link, keep our podcast free by shopping at Amazon, and then buy all the stuff you want.
Everything you normally buy, you can purchase through our site, and Amazon will give us money so that we're able to keep the podcast free.
Help us help you.
We love you a little bit.
Just a little. A lot.
Let's see. Book that needs to be canceled. What is yours?
Listen, this is one of my categories. I threw it out there.
You could say this for next year's.
Yeah, exactly. I mean. No. The book that needs to be canceled is, you know, coming straight out of the events of Axis number 9, Wolverines. I know it hasn't started yet, but just cancel this stupid book already.
It's a 2015 book. This is our 2014.
I don't care. Just cancel the stupid thing.
Yeah, actually, I admit I was a little disappointed because I saw a book called Wolverines, and I thought it was about the teenagers from Red Dawn.
Right.
And I got real excited for a second, and then I saw it's not them, and I was really sad.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Listen, from 2014, what would I be happy canceling? Come back to me.
You can keep your answer.
Well, yeah, I'll keep my answer, but before we move on to the next one, see if I come up with something.
I have a question about Dirts.
Yeah.
I guess first let people know what yours was.
I chose a book from Image Comics by Joe Casey called Sex.
Why don't you like that one,
Dirts? Wasn't that book that sex, Ian Churchill was doing the art on, was
talk
it?
About you.
No, that was Rhett
Talk about all good things.
Wait. No, actually, I don't know, because I'm thinking of Rhett Queen's dude. That might not be the same dude.
I don't know who. This is what I can tell you about this book. This is one of Image's books that's supposed to be the cutting edge. This is the book for the mature readers. This is the book for, you know, that grown-ups can go out and read. And really, all it is an excuse to draw boobs and dongs. And it's one of those books where, when it first came out, you know, everybody had to have a copy. We ordered, you know, normally the amount of comics we would order, we ordered like four times as many as we normally ordered. And people were going nuts for it. We had to reorder when it came to number two because people still wanted them. And it was supposed to be, you know, that Image really treats its fans like grown-ups and gives grown-ups a book that grown-ups can read. And at this point in time, we order two copies for the shelf. Nobody reserves them in advance. Most of the time, they don't even sell the week they come out. They just sit on the shelves for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks, and weeks until finally someone comes in who's, you know, 18, 19 years old, and they go, it's a book called Sex. It's got boobs in it. And then that's the one they buy.
Are you getting that same reaction from Bitch Planet?
No, that's mostly people that just kind of walk in and look at it and go, huh, and put it back on the shelf and just walk away.
I found when I tweet about Bitch Planet, someone usually jumps to my mentions like, laugh out loud, Bitch Planet.
Yeah.
That's real mature.
So I'm going to – this is funny that one brought up because I'm still – I guess this is kind of telling because I'm still actually buying that book, Sex. But I'm behind in reading because I remember reading the first arc and then I think we got caught up in other stuff. So it wasn't that the book was – because I'm kind of looking outside of the fact that, yeah, it's got a lot of sex in the book. Because even though that was part of... Let me back that up. The part of the draw was not for because it doesn't have boobs in it, because, heck, you can go anywhere before that. But because of the fact that it was saying, well, what if superheroes had sex, and that was kind of a part of the story, and just another blah, 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 kind of had an appeal. And like I said, I just kind of got behind on it. So.
Well, Image just does that with all their books anymore. It seems every big book, big event book that Image pushes out has to have someone naked, someone having sex. You know, there's got to be boobs in it. There's got to be a dong drawn in it somewhere. And that's supposed to be the Image way that we're treating our grown-up readers like grown-ups. And it's like, you know, you're really not if the grown-up selling point is just the fact that you're putting nudity in the books. Because then that almost makes it...
And you're cussing.
That almost makes it less grown up than...
There wasn't that much of that in that book.
But, I mean, it's just, you know, it was Sex Criminals and Saga and, you know, everything else that just keeps going for, you know, that type of thing. That's the Image thing nowadays. Like, right. I want Image to launch a book that has no nudity, no foul language, but yet have a mature storyline that readers can get behind, and let's see them do something with that.
And you just reminded me of another book that was rather disappointing that I want to say came out last year from Joe Casey.
Does it need to be canceled?
No, I mean, it's not. It hasn't had an issue in a while.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, yeah. Joe Casey's The Bounce. It ended back in May, so it was already done for.
Yeah, I gave up on that a while
ago. Yeah, and he claimed to have the Spider-Man formula down pat, and I don't think he really did.
Gotcha.
All right, Roddy, why do you want to see Deadpool go away?
That was a joke answer. I don't like Deadpool. This is not a secret. This is not a secret. I've said this many times on the show, but that was just a joke answer. I really didn't have
any problems with Deadpool right now. It's kind of funny. I've come around.
I actually liked him when he was inverted because that whole pacifist thing was kind of amusing.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just a joke answer.
That's funny.
I went with Spider-Man 2099. I really couldn't think of anything that I really wanted to be canceled, but it's mostly me being disappointed with just how the book has gone so far. It hasn't been as fun as I thought it would be.
That's funny.
All right, disappointing genre TV show.
Wait, hold on. I want to throw in, I did add a book that came out in 2014. I want the Deathstroke book to be canceled.
Why?
Just because I see where they're going with this, and they're redoing Deathstroke and making him, kind of remaking him in the image of what's on the Arrow TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not cool with that. So
see, I liked the original Deathstroke New 52 series when that one came out
before Liefeld got his hands on it.
Yeah, before Liefeld ruined it, flushed it down the toilet. But
yeah.
Up until that point, that was a great series. I loved that, but yeah, it kind of went off.
Yeah, now we're dealing with Arrow-style Deathstroke. I'm just like, really? I liked the first issue, and then, you know, I think it's up to issue 3 now, and they just need to stop that book. Mm.
So, I just thought about a couple of books I could bring up. It's not necessarily that they needed to be canceled. Well, one of them could be canceled, and we've talked about them before, either Amazing X-Men or Nightcrawler.
Oh, yes.
Because they're kind of doing the same thing. And I kind of would hate that. I hate that because I kind of enjoy what those books are doing, but they really don't. Like, you could fold the stuff they're doing in either book into one and mm-hmm. be good.
Well, Nightcrawler's going right anyway.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's
Amazing X-Men. Yeah, we always talk about Amazing X-Men just being, you know, a cash hole. You know, it's just a no reason. I don't know why. I haven't,
nostalgia.
I haven't dropped it yet. Yeah, I guess.
All right. Disappointing genre TV show.
Wow, y'all really? Okay.
All right, well, let's start with Roddy's, because he's the odd man out here.
Well, yeah, that's usually the case. So,
since the Deadpool TV show's got to go away. Oh, wait, sorry. Not
the weirdest thing is, Arrow is not a bad show, but out of all of the ones that are going on right now, it's the one that I kind of get to last. And it is mostly for that. Like, even Gotham, I kind of like for a reason, but it's not necessarily because of... Well, I like Gotham because of more of the over-the-top acting and whatnot. As a more...
It's so bad, story. It's
basically, yeah, because it's basically a procedural with Batman dressing on it. So, or shades of Batman dressing on it, I should say. Mm-hmm. But it's just that's kind of the thing that's keeping me there, you know, on Gotham. And like Arrow's still been good. It's just a matter of that's like, yeah, the whole Batman and, you know.
Well, I mean, to be fair, this is most disappointing. So Arrow, you could still like it, but it's
sure.
disappointing to you. It doesn't mean that you don't like the show.
Well, yeah, yeah. So like I said, it's the kind of the one that I kind of gravitate towards last because it's like, okay, it's just more Arrow, and while it has been good, it's just. You know, doing his thing.
Right. Okay.
Well, the rest of us pick Gotham. Which I don't even watch anymore. Like, I completely gave up on the series. There's no way.
I think the first five episodes in a binge, and then I said, wait, why am I wasting my time with this? And then I stopped.
I was really hoping that this was going to be the show. Like, I was really looking forward to this show. I wanted this to be, you know, the Dark Knight movies on the small screen, you know, prequel. I was really hoping that's what this was going to be. And instead, it's just a mess of, like you said, the overacting, just horrible, horrible set design and cinematography where, you know, they walk into a pharmacy and every light bulb in the pharmacy is green. And then they walk out in the alley and every light bulb is orange. And then they go to somebody's office and every light bulb is blue, you know, and they do that stupid comic book thing where every room has to have its own color set and they jam every character they can into every episode they can.
That's my biggest gripe with this is that even with something like Batman the Animated Series, they took their time introducing these characters, and that's really how it should have been done here. But here, it's, you know, we tease this character here, and we show this character here, and we're going to throw these characters together into one storyline. It's just far too much going on. It's far too complicated. I know, you know, non-genre fans, you know, in my family who've asked me about it, you know, they're surprised that I don't like it, but... You know, I don't want to necessarily turn them off to it because, you know, it's still Batman, you know, and you know, anything that keeps them, you know, attached to it or attached to the genre is, you know, is okay in my book, I guess.
Yeah.
No, I'd rather see it canceled and replaced by a good show.
All right.
But they're introducing the Graysons after they come back.
Oh, not to me then.
Most satisfying genre TV show.
Wait a minute. Back up real quick, because I am really, really surprised that none of y'all chose Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., because none of y'all were on top of that show.
Oh, yeah.
Was on that show.
That actually never popped in my mind. But
like, I'm really surprised about that.
If there was like comeback player of the year.
That would have been right. That would have been my pick, because in terms of satisfying, I think our choice is still... like a half step ahead of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for me. I love Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I love where it went. Mm-hmm. I'm very disappointed that Agent Tripp, you know, got waxed.
Yeah.
But, you know, and that's and that definitely takes away from, you know, the show for me a little bit. But in terms of most satisfying, the way this category was named I think that's why I chose The Flash.
Fair.
Oh, agree with everything he said. Flash has been great.
The Flash. Roddy chose The Flash. We all chose The Flash.
Yeah.
You guys,
Flash is just great. Yeah.
I've seen the first four episodes, I think. I mean, I plan on continuing to watch it. I just don't necessarily have the time always, but right. It's one of those things where
you're looking to catch up on it.
Yeah, I'll sit down and I'll watch 2 or 3 hours of it, you know,
right.
to get more caught up, but, right. You know, just whenever randomly I get time.
Right. Mm-hmm. As opposed to Gotham, where you're just like, I don't even need to try to.
Yeah, Gotham, I'm never going to watch again.
Right.
So, Flash, I want to watch, and I don't want to wait for it to be on Netflix. I want to watch it before that time.
Right.
So right. I've got the shows I'm not going to watch, the shows that I'll watch eventually when they get to Netflix, like S.H.I.E.L.D., I'll probably like flip through and catch, you know, I won't watch every episode, but I'll watch like the important story ones. Mm-hmm. But Flash is a show that I want to watch. I fell behind and, you know, I got to make time for it.
Right.
Yeah, Flash was the one they kind of leaned into just nice and early enough with the comic book stuff. And they even said that this is going to be the most comic book show that they've done to date. And they've leaned into it really nicely. Right. Like all of the little reference and stuff, even though they do it on Arrow 2 and whatnot, you know, all of the references have been pretty on point. And like, I can't think of too many nitpicks about the show that couldn't, or just that.
Right. I mean, yeah, for myself, you know, my criticisms are minor at best. I want to say that my favorite part of the Flash is that they've kind of tapped into something that we got from the first Captain America movie, where a lot of people told me that they found themselves rooting for skinny Steve Rogers, and that followed into, you know, the Steve Rogers we know post-Super Soldier Serum, right? What's cool about the Flash is that you're actively rooting for Barry Allen. You want to see him succeed, and you know there's elements of, you know, a Spider-Man type story in this show, and there's elements of, you know, like a procedural type thing also because of the nature of his work. So there's a couple of nice, you know, elements here, but like I said, I think the biggest thing for me is that I find myself rooting for Barry Allen, and well, that's a big deal.
For me, one of the big things is that Flash, as opposed to a lot of the other characters, has always been a more optimistic book. Mm-hmm. And that's what I feel watching this show. You know, Arrow could be dark and brooding. He could be bright and vibrant. You know, you just pick whatever and it doesn't really matter. But Flash, I was always afraid that they were going to try to make it dark. And that's kind of what they did with the 90s TV show.
Right.
And it didn't, you know, really work out as well as it should have. And so when they made this show, I was really afraid that they were going to try to do a dark Flash. And, you know, when I saw how, you know, optimistic it really is, you know, how uplifting, you know, it kind of feels like, you get to the end of the episode and you're like, yeah, all right, he beat the bad guy. Yes. You know, that type of stuff that you really don't catch on a lot of the genre stuff nowadays. It works with that character. It's how it's supposed to be with that character. And for me, it just, everything just falls into place.
There you go.
It's pretty good that, because like Flash and Arrow have been pretty much running the same playbook as far as how the shows have been going. I mean, as far as the outlines of the shows have been going, Flash has just been doing it better because it has learned. I like to think it's learned from the lessons it got from Arrow, you know, which is making it that much better. But it's just using it a lot more effectively, especially, you know, with the character and the, like you said, the optimism and everything else going on with it.
Let's see, book that needs more readers. I picked two DC books, just Action Comics and just Elite 3000, because I'm enjoying both of them.
Okay.
And I'm not the biggest fan of Superman, so for me to read a Superman book takes a lot.
I'm kind of surprised that it's Action of the Superman books. Not that I necessarily have anything against. I think Greg Pak is the one doing it right now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just the stories just tend to be more the random stuff he runs into, and the Lana Lang focus on the book just seems different from the other Superman books. But I mean, at the same time, it makes it stand out differently. It does, you know, satisfy its own little corner of the Superman mythos. So,
indeed.
I like the fact that you picked that.
Thank you. Who's up next?
Well, Agent 7, you want to tag team this one?
Yeah. Yeah, we're both on Storm. We both would like to have more people be reading Storm.
Yeah, I don't want to see this book go away because it has potential to be a really good book.
It's also Greg Pak written.
Exactly.
Greg Pak again.
So, and I also have on the side of Guardians 3000. The book just kind of just started a couple of months ago, but I really don't want. I would like to see this book get some legs behind it.
I love this book.
Yes.
This is one of my candidates further down the list. But Guardians 3000, I love this book. I haven't had a chance to take a look at its sales. I don't know where it is in the rankings. Because of the niche that it occupies, I wouldn't be surprised if it's pretty far down. I really want this book to succeed, though.
Yeah, I didn't even look at sales to see how my two were doing. I figured they at least just Elite 3000 fight under the radar.
Yeah.
You know, both books are tied to big franchises, though.
And I read was Deep State, which is an independent book. Mm-hmm. This is from Justin Jordan, best known from his time on Green Lantern Corps. And it's if you took the tone of the X-Files and you mixed it with Men in Black, that's basically what it is. This is the secret government team that comes in to cover up all the crazy conspiracy stuff that happens. So this is not, you know, Mulder and Scully trying to uncover the truth. This is the team trying to hide everything so that it doesn't get out to the general public. But it has that same kind of dark tone that you got with X-Files, with a little bit of humor peppered in here and there. But I've just really enjoyed it. It's one of those things where it feels fresh enough I'm not, you know, treading the same ground that you got with X-Files. It's not treading the same ground that you got with Men in Black. It does feel like it's got its own thing going on, even though you can make those easy comparisons. But it's really, really an enjoyable book. And, of course, I think it's from Boom Studios, so a lot of people aren't going to give it the same attention they're going to give to a Marvel or DC.
That's been on my list to read because I'm a Justin Jordan fan, so... maybe after this recommendation again, I'll at least check out issue number one.
Yeah, yeah, it's good. I'll like it, I hope, or I'll beat you up.
Who else is up, or is that the end of the category?
That's the end of that one.
Okay. Best gimmick or variant cover? Again, I abstain.
Well, I'm going with one that we brought up earlier, the Phil Noto retro covers, because I enjoyed those, and honorable mention for Scotty Young, because, you know, it's Scotty Young.
Yeah, those Scotty Young ones are always pretty good.
Okay, I'll go. The month that DC was doing all the Futures End 3D covers, Marvel decided to poke a little fun at them, so they had a Deadpool number 34 3D cover, and it just showed Deadpool dancing. You know, as you flip it, the motion is Deadpool dancing across the front of the comic, doing a little.
I don't remember seeing.
He's got a hat and a cane, and he's doing his little dance.
I was like, "Hello, my baby. Hello, my dog."
Yeah, exactly.
No way! Now I got to track this down. This is funny.
But it was. It was one of those, I think they only sent it out to like the top 2,000 retailers, which, I mean, granted, in the United States, there's only maybe 3,000 independent comic shops anyway. But it was like one per store, you know, so it's like a $90 variant if you find it out there on eBay or whatever. It's pretty pricey, but it's one of those great, it's an in-joke within the industry, but it's also a fun, well done cover.
Oh, I gotta take a look at that now. All right. So mine is something that caught my eye just recently. It was a book that was out maybe 2 weeks ago. It's All New X-Men number 34. It's the Groot variant. I'm going to put it up right here. It is an homage to a great Paul Smith Uncanny X-Men cover number. I actually did some research on this. Number 173. It's a great Groot cover, you know, done in that you know, done as an homage to that cover. You could see Groot popping claws. It's pretty cool. And Rocket is taking Rogue's place on the cover. When I saw this, I had to pick this up. You know, I was enthralled by it. I was like, wow, that's just a great, great cover. Shout out to honorary mention. Shout out to the Marvel Legends covers that were out earlier this year. Earlier in 2014, actually, that recreated classic Marvel covers using Marvel Legends figures, action figures.
All right. Most satisfying book.
Wow. 3 out of 4. Look at this.
So, since I'm the oddball here in this category, I went with All New X-Men just because of how fun that whole series has been since it started in, I guess, what was it, 2013?
Mm-hmm. I will admit, I've really liked the last 4 months on that book. Mm-hmm. I didn't really care for the Guardians of the Galaxy crossover and all that kind of stuff. But the story they've been doing now, where they're stuck in the Ultimate Universe, I love that storyline.
I just realized there was really no fallout from that. There was only two, I guess as a typical Marvel event, there was only like two takeaways from that crossover event. That was the Kitty Pryde and Star-Lord relationship. 0-3, and I guess Jean Grey getting her new powers, whatever those are that she hasn't really used lately. But everyone else chose Avengers, New Avengers, in some form or variation.
Right, because it's the payoff. The payoff is coming. You can sense it, and that's what's so much fun.
And we got Dirt on board.
Yeah, I know.
When did this happen?
Unbelievable.
It almost killed me when I came to this realization that that's what I was going to pick. But I was going through everything, and I really have to say that if it wasn't for New Avengers, I wouldn't be reading as many Marvel books as I am right now. And I love New Avengers so much, I even started reading Avengers, which I hadn't read in years. So I cheated. I put Avengers and New Avengers down. And then I saw Agent 70 did the exact same thing, put both of them down, and Roddy went down with New Avengers. I just loved the way that they've been able to structure the storyline where they throw out, you know, originally they threw out these hypotheticals. Well, it's like, well, what happens if we have to destroy a world? Would any of us be able to do it? And it took Namor to just basically say, yeah, here, hand me the device. Boom, billion people dead. I don't care. You know, and just kind of move on. And the fallout from it has continued. Like, it actually feels like these storylines are reverberating and making a difference. And it is changing the status quo for these characters more than any big Marvel event, more than an Original Sin, more than an Axis, more than any of these things that Marvel throws out. It's the ongoing monthlies in Avengers and New Avengers that actually feels like it's changing things, and they're important. And right. And I've really enjoyed them.
Plus, it has one of my favorite moments of the book, which is this one that's on screen right now. With Black Panther, for those not watching the video, Black Panther punching the hell out of Namor.
Yeah, but Namor was the only one who was man enough to follow through on the plan.
This is true. That's much respect.
That's funny.
All right, most satisfied. Yeah, but, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, that was one of those moments that I didn't think that anybody would actually do it. Like, there's a whole issue of every guy trying to take a turn at, will I be the one who presses the button? Mm-hmm. Like, I can't do it. You do it. I can't do it. You do it. I can't do it. Like, they kept passing the buck until finally it got to Namor, and he was like, fine, I don't care. Blam, everyone's dead. Let's move on.
Yep.
As he said, that's what kings do.
That's right.
Yeah, and it fit the character. Like, that's the other thing. It didn't come out of left field with Namor. I mean, as soon as Namor does it, you're like, yeah, that makes sense.
You know, it did not come off as villainous. It came off as pragmatic. And we saw, you know, in later issues, how he struggled with that and how that affected him.
Mm-hmm.
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 Most satisfying genre movie.
Oh, it looks like Roddy and I have got the same two candidates.
Yep. Probably for different reasons. I mean, the same reasons, but for different reasons as to why they're good. Guardians of the Galaxy was just a fun movie. It came out of nowhere, pretty much, because you know, we even when the premise came out, I was like, okay, you're doing a movie on that, you know, and as we said earlier, not too many people are that familiar with it, you know, either in any iteration of it to really know who they were. And I've had people who were like, come up to me like, who are these, you know, who are these people and why do they have a movie? To which, you know, I had to properly break it down. But it was just a generally fun movie, you know, and as the money, I mean, as the sales have said, a lot of people liked it.
Yep.
So, and as far as Cap 2 was concerned, that was pretty much the movie that not only changed the landscape a little bit, but it also did it for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., as we talked
about. That's right.
Which, as a lot of people have said, made that show better. Because it pretty much reverberated around the land, around the landscape as we know it now. So, and it was just a generally good book. We got to see, a good movie. We got to see a full good use of Cap's powers. We got to see him, you know, Falcon came in, you know, the interactions between him and Black Widow and everybody, and just a generally good story. You know, a helicopter got dropped out of the sky. You know, what else can you ask for?
Right, and a great Winter Soldier.
Exactly, especially the Winter Soldier. Yeah.
So, you know, I agree with everything you said. Just, you know, it was a great, you know, 1-2 punch for the Marvel Studios movies.
Now, I did put a cheat on mine because I also wanted to throw in their RoboCop just in the face of everybody else that claimed to hate it. That was a movie. It was doomed to fail in the box office to begin with, because as soon as they said they were going to do it, everyone said, oh, why are you going to remake it? And then they said, well, we're not going to remake it. We're going to reimagine it. And then as soon as they say they're going to reimagine it, everyone goes, oh, why didn't you just remake it? So yeah. It was never going to get its fair share, but it really did something that the original movie didn't. And it was something that Frank Miller really wanted to do in the second movie. But, you know, the studio grabbed it. It got away from him. It totally went off his script, and they were never able to get into. But really, where does the man stop and the machine start? Hmm. And that was the whole concept of what this movie was. I mean, that's what it dove into. The first one was explosions and shootouts and just, you know, it was a big summer event movie, whereas this was a much smaller, more focused, more human story, and it was something different, and I really enjoyed it for what it was, but I just knew it was never going to get a fair share out there in the box office.
Okay. Let's see. Scroll back up.
Wow, so we all had Captain America Winter Soldier up there. That's the most satisfying genre.
Yeah, that was mine. Cool.
Yep.
That was my choice. Most satisfying event. I went with kind of a combination of Uncanny Avengers stories, Ragnarok Now and Avenged Earth, just because that was so exciting as it was occurring. It's kind of the finale left a little bit to be desired, but just the build up to it was had a lot of drama involved in it.
All right. Yeah, as I was saying before, the 2014 was a very rough year for crossover events, or just events period. It was kind of tough for me to think of the most satisfying, but then I thought, wait a second. What event did I actually have a decent time reading the ending for? That was Goblin Nation, Spidey Ock, no more, sort of. So that was my most satisfying event of 2014.
I think I had that one for most disappointing for some reason.
I don't blame a lot of people for that too.
The ending of Goblin Nation, where he unmasked the Green Goblin, and he's like, "Wait, who the heck are you?" And he goes, "Well, I had plastic surgery. I can look like anybody. You'll never know who I am." It was like, "Oh, that." To me, was lame. But, and then plus, Spidey, Ock, Doc Spider-Man, whatever you want to call him, that was the greatest thing ever. And then the fact that they would bring Peter Parker back was just...
Agreed. Let's see.
Now, Roddy, I see you put Time Runs Out.
Yeah.
And I kind of wanted to pick that. The problem is the story isn't over.
I know. And that was which is why I had the next one on there. Like, yeah, it's still going on. It could fold, but as of right now, and the story has been going pretty great, you know, with what's going on, weaving in and out of the couple of books. I'm hoping it's going to pay out. I'm hoping we don't come back here next year, and that's going to be my most disappointing one. But at this point, I can say
Convergence will be mine.
You said you weren't even going to read that one, though.
Yep. Staying away.
Oh, he won't read it, but it's his most satisfying event of 2015.
That would be unsatisfying or disappointing.
Yeah. Disappointing, yeah.
That's funny.
So, but I also put 100th anniversary, which was not technically an event. Well, it wasn't. I mean, it wasn't an event as far as, you know, running from book to book. There was a bunch of just the standalone books, you know, dealing with the various properties. There were a couple of them that were just out of left field, crazy, but that's what made them really good. So at least the ones that I remember reading.
Most satisfying relaunch.
Hey, wait, go back.
Oh, yeah, you do yours.
I didn't my most satisfying event.
You talked earlier, I thought that.
I can only speak once, so I guess I gotta take my moment. No, I went with Transformers Dark Cybertron, which was the Transformers story that made people realize that it wasn't just a licensed book based off an old toy line that a bunch of overgrown kids are reading. Like, it was how you make a mature storyline for adult readers without it being full of boobs and dongs and without it being full of harsh language, with really high-brow concepts and intelligent thinking and real character development. That's what Dark Cybertron actually was. And so it's one of those stories that you have to put some time and some thought into it. You got to let your head, you know, get wrapped around it. But so much happened in such a short span, and it all fits. It's all perfectly done. It was just, it was the best thing in comics that went as an event this year.
Nice. Go there.
Good all sell.
Right. Most satisfying relaunch.
Satisfying relaunch.
I did all new X Factor, just because I know it didn't last long, but there was a time where all new X Factor was one of the X books I was most looking forward to reading each month.
Wait a minute.
My bid.
Isn't it still going?
It's about to end.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, like, didn't an issue just come out like 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, they've already announced when it's ending, though. So
okay, all right.
I threw out co-nominees for this category for most satisfying relaunch: the relaunch of Ms. Marvel and the relaunch of Guardians of the Galaxy, which they've now renamed Guardians 3000. I'm really enjoying these two books.
You know, I didn't take those as relaunches. I took just those as launches.
Well, because Ms. Marvel was a pre-existing title, they just relaunched it with a new character.
Well, yeah.
I read a book this past week about e-comics and the commerce behind them, written by Todd Allen, I think his name is, and he's been researching Comixology, Comics Plus, you know, sales, how everything works out. And Ms. Marvel is one of those weird exceptions in the digital comic space, where most digital comics sell as a percentage of the print books. So if a print book sells 100,000 print copies, then it usually sells about 10, 15,000 digital copies.
Okay.
And that scales. So if you drop it to 50, then it goes to, you know, about 7,000, you know, whatever. I mean, it just...
5 to 7,000, I see.
5 to 7,000, right. So it's all on scale, except for Ms. Marvel. For whatever reason, and probably due to low orders initially by retailers, the digital sales on Ms. Marvel are 50 to 60% of what the print orders are. And just because a lot of people walked in the store, they tried to get the first issue, they couldn't get it, so they just bought it digitally, and they just keep buying it digitally. Mm-hmm. So it's not one, it's not a title where the print sales have been pushed up because of the popularity. It actually pushed up the digital sales because a lot of people said, I'm not a comic collector. I'm not buying this to resell it to make, you know, 10 bucks in 10 years. I just want to read the story. And so that became one of those, you know, black sheep hits on the digital market, which I found totally interesting.
Yes, that's absolutely interesting. That's intriguing. Fascinating.
My most satisfying relaunch, though, I went with RoboCop. And the amazing thing is this is not the RoboCop of the movie. This is relaunching the character from the original 80s movie. It's not the new 2014 movie. Even though, confusingly enough, they call it RoboCop 2014, it's actually the RoboCop from the 80s being retold in 2014, whatever. But they're continuing the original series of movies, skipping the second and third film, you know, just as a sequel to that original film. But it is dead set in that universe. The artwork is great. The characters look like the actors. It feels like the original RoboCop movie. It's got all the I'd buy that for a dollar in jokes and everything that you're looking for. It is firmly entrenched in that time and that universe, and it was a lot of fun.
Cool. Rod, you didn't have a most satisfying relaunch?
I had one, but I took it off because I'm going to talk about it later.
Okay.
Best colorist. We all had different picks.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting.
Agent 70, your guy is Guy.
There's a bunch of different colorists on Gotham Academy now. It's a group that I'm nominating because there's an article on Newsarama that I read recently where Carl Kerschel goes into the coloring and the coloring aspect, and there's a team of colorists to keep to try to keep a monthly schedule on this book and churn out the phenomenal color art that we're getting. There's a rotating group of colorists, so I realized, yeah, I think you're about to drop a bunch of names. I didn't want to type in every name, but if you want to go ahead and name them, go ahead.
Oh, I actually thought it was just one person.
Oh, no, it's like, hold on. I've got, like, this week's, like 2 weeks ago or last week's book, we've got, like, a Geyser, a Misasic, and a LaPointe. You know, I think there's a group of people who are coloring this book, and it is phenomenal work, Gotham Academy people. The story, you know, we're still kind of on the fence about, but the art in this book is phenomenal.
I went with Matt Wilson, who's the colorist on the new female Thor book. I think he also does Daredevil, Young Avengers, Wicked and Divine, a couple other books.
Well, I went with Jordi Belair because, one, she's everywhere, and two, I think the reason why I picked it was because of the Moon Knight stuff. Because I kind of love the way that stuff was colored.
Nice.
And I chose Justin Ponzer. He did the Death of Wolverine series. He did some Guardians of the Galaxy, but what I know him for is Miles Morales, Ultimate Spider-Man. He really makes that artwork come alive and pop.
Absolutely.
But more than that, though, in this latest issue where they actually went back in time and showed the history of Miles' dad, and they went back to a different time period, they changed the artwork. Marquez actually changed his drawing style to make the flashback look different, and Ponzer changed his coloring style to match the artwork. So they both kind of collaborated on changing the look of the book to do that flashback, and it just, I remember when I was reading it, it blew me away that it was the same dudes. So when it came time to, you know, pick a colorist, I'm like, well, hey, this guy stands out in my mind for the tremendous job he just did, so that's what I went with.
Cool.
Best artist. I changed my answer.
Well, I'll follow up on what I was saying with best colorist. My best artist right now is Carl Kerschel. I'm just in love with the art on Gotham Academy.
I copied Roddy Cat, who chose Phil Noto. Because I had to change it because I believe I had a tweet this week that said, like, if Phil Noto's not in your best of 2014, you know, artists, then it's not an official list.
Ah!
If we make a statement like that, I gotta pick the guy.
Yeah, you might as well make that one up.
Yeah. Plus, I've been, you know, I've enjoyed Black Widow since it's come out. He's drawn every issue, and he changed his whole entire art style from the couple of fill-in issues of, like, Thunderbolts and Rick Remender's Uncanny X-Force he did. So now I think he does the whole art, including colors now, doesn't he? It's more like a painting style.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that was the reason why I went with him, not necessarily for the painting style, because he's kind of killing it on Black Widow and others, as we've seen with the variants and whatnot.
And I went with...
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I went with Mike Mignola, a guy who does Hellboy, and that's kind of, as long as he's alive and drawing, he's going to be my favorite artist every year. Doesn't matter who else is doing that. As long as he could be 90 years old, he's doing one cover a year. That's fine with me. He's still my favorite artist of the year.
I kind of wanted to give an honorable mention to somebody, but then I thought about it. He's only done like one book this past year, and that was Ramon Villalobos, who did a book nobody pretty much read, I don't think, which was the What If Age of Ultron number 2.
Okay.
So, I mean, I enjoyed that artwork a good bit. So I was going to pull it up, but that's right.
Best writer.
I love how we have 4 answers to this. That's awesome.
Mine should have been the same as yours. But...
Which one? Oh, you're talking about mine?
Yeah.
No, nah, you know what? I was actually thinking about picking yours as well, so it's kind of funny. So I chose Jonathan Hickman because after this long odyssey, like literally an odyssey, you feel like Odysseus reading New Avengers and Avengers, you know, getting to the end of the story, and the payoffs are coming, and that is why I'm completely in love with these books. You know, I've been a supporter, you know, since Jump. I obviously followed Hickman over from his run on FF. So and Dirt has brought up in recent past shows, what's going to happen to the Avengers? What are we going to do when Hickman finally finishes his run on these books? What do we do now? What do we do then? I mean, so you know, that's it's a thought that I don't want to think at this point. Like, what are we going to do when he finally finishes? But at this point, he's, you know, in my opinion, the best writer out there right now.
And I have G. Willow Wisdom for the stuff that she's doing on Ms. Marvel, because she just brought so much to that character. You know, it's a brand new character, and that book is really great to read. You know, and it's always just a joy to pick up and go through. And I'm looking forward to what she does on X-Men when she starts, whenever that comes back.
Yes.
I kind of wanted to pick Jonathan Hickman because I really enjoyed his stuff on Avengers, New Avengers this year. But the problem is he writes a bunch of other stuff that I don't really care about. Mm-hmm. So I didn't want to pick him as best writer. And I had to think, whose name, if I see it on a book, am I going to think to myself, I'm probably going to enjoy that book? And I went with Geoff Johns. He may not write what's, you know, like the best story of the year that I'm going to say, oh, you got to read that particular story. But he always writes a well-done story. He always writes a well-plotted story, a well-timed story, a well-paced story. And so to me, he's just the most satisfying guy. If I see Geoff Johns is writing a book, then I'm going to pick it up, I'm going to read it, and I know I'm going to enjoy it, regardless of what it is. Whereas some of these other guys, Soul, Hickman, Snyder, who's stuff I will like here and there, I don't necessarily like their whole catalog of stuff. So okay. I went with John just because I know he's a pretty safe bet. No matter what he's writing, I'm going to enjoy it.
And I went with Charles Soule, the Wolverine architect. He's also taken the Inhuman franchise and actually has me interested in caring about what's in store for them in 2015 and beyond.
That is no small feat. That is no small feat. And Charles Soule was definitely one of my candidates also. I'm glad that you picked them. And for Letter 44.
And She-Hulk.
And for Red Superman. And She-Hulk.
Red Lanterns.
Right. So, you know, we all have books that we like from Charles Soule.
I forgot about She-Hulk in my thought process, too.
Yeah. No, but, you know, but Inhuman is the biggest, you know, the biggest coup for him, because he's made Inhuman a very intriguing and very, it's one of the books that you look forward to picking up and flipping through, and that's a great thing for Inhumans as a character group.
And best licensed title?
Seriously?
Someone's answer was changed.
There's a blank spot there. I had to fill it.
Oh. Could have at least been Strawberry. I mean, geez.
Age of 70 doesn't have a best licensed title.
I don't read any of the licensed titles. Like, at best, I was going to put down Godzilla, but I haven't really read any of the Godzilla things.
I don't know. It says Cherry Pop-Tart right there on the spreadsheet.
Hey, you don't have to give an answer. I didn't give answers for the variant covers.
That's funny.
I went with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles from IDW. Behind, like, two issues, I believe, but it's been enjoyable. The whole Shadowland, that could have been my favorite event of the year. Not Shadowland, but I forget what that's. What was this? I forget the name of the event they did. I think it was last year in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles franchise, where they were finding a foot and they had to escape out of New York at the end of it. But City Fall, it was called.
Right.
That was cool. And that is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is one of the only, well, probably the only licensed title I do read on a regular basis. So my answer was easy.
Well, I have G.I. Joe. It didn't necessarily need to be relaunched as it had been, but they got a new writer and they they're making it a little more like a military. They're making it more of a kind of movie-ish type of, not necessarily movie, a military type of. Words are failing me right now, but it is a good book. Let's put it this way, and I've been enjoying reading, as well as Dirt's pick that I've been enjoying lately.
I'm having some bandwidth issues here. I'm not sure if this is working or not.
You're on.
Yeah, you sound good. No.
Everything was kind of breaking up and getting away from me there. So I put down Star Trek as my best licensed title. And
yes.
Part of that, not only have the stories been really good, which is something that you want, obviously, it's being overseen by the same people that oversee the movies. So everything that happens in this comic series is canon. And some of the stuff, you know, between the first movie and the second movie, when you got to the second movie, people were like, wait a minute, why is Mudd's ship in the docking bay of the Enterprise? When did this happen? Well, it happened in the comics.
Right.
When you go back to the first movie and people say, well, what happened to Nero? He was just hiding out for 20 years. What happened with that guy? Where did he go? Well, it was in the comic. You know, all this stuff, all this things that you miss in the movie, if you're just watching the movies, you're only getting half the story, because most of your backstory, your character development, all this type of stuff is happening actually in the comics that tie into the movies. And for me, that's great. I love that.
I definitely want, based on your recommendations, I want to go back and read all these Star Trek issues, especially the ones that you were referencing a couple weeks back about
the Q.
With Q and with DS9, you know, with the DS9 characters and stuff like that. That, you know, that sounds very fun to read. So
yeah, I actually picked it up based on that myself. So I started reading it again.
Cool.
All right. And the final category.
We're all scrambling to fill in.
Comic book movie you are looking forward to.
Rod, you still thinking?
No. I'm actually agreeing with you guys, with you and Tim's on yours with Avengers: Age of Ultron. I just hadn't had a chance to put it in there. I am looking forward to Star Wars. I just wasn't taking that one as a comic movie, but Age of Ultron. Yeah, I am definitely looking forward to when that drops.
Yeah, actually, when I put Star Wars 7, and I was thinking more along the lines of it being a genre. Movie category, not necessarily comic book movie.
Right.
Now that I see it actually says comic book movie, then I should pick something different. But
this is going to be a comic book, so you're kind of
I know. I don't blame you for that. Yeah, I don't think.
And it was before now that I think about it. So
exactly.
But I mean, to be quite honest, I'm not that excited yet about Age of Ultron. It's one of those things that I hope it's good. And I look forward to seeing it in the theater, but I don't know. I just don't have the same feeling for Age of Ultron that I had for the first Avengers movie. And I don't know. There's something about it that just doesn't feel it doesn't feel like the band's back together type of thing. It feels more like contractual obligation 2015 movie. So I don't know. We'll see how it turns out. But
I can see that.
I have a little more trepidation for it than I had for the original.
Well, see, what's surprising about that for me is having never actually seen, you know, a set of movies lead up to a group of characters coming together. I would have thought that the first Avengers would have held or caused you to hold a lot more. To be a lot more cautious, to be a lot more wary, and have a little bit more trepidation about it, given that we had never seen anything like that before. So, you know, in my eyes, coming off of that, you know, that was pulled off so well for me. I can't wait to see how they build on that, and that's why I'm looking forward to this so much.
That could be part of the problem, too, is I enjoy the original Avengers so much that you make a sequel to it, and then suddenly it's like, you know, now you're going back to it. Is it going to hold the same as the original?
Gotcha.
Well, look at it this way. This has the potential to be the Empire Strikes Back of this set of movies, depending on how you feel about Empire. So... go with that, how you will.
But are you saying that we're going to have the Marvel equivalent of Ewoks in the third one? Come on now, don't.
Oh, no. Oh, great. So it's Mole Man and the Mole People are going to be in the third one.
Oh, my goodness.
So that about does it.
That wraps it up. We had a supersized, extra-sized 100th episode, people.
We hit you with comic reviews throughout the year, comic news. We went to comic conventions, and we'll be doing the same and much more in 2015.
Looking forward to it.
Absolutely.
Thank all the fans and viewers for supporting us and watching the shows, reading our reviews and whatnot, our articles on the website. Make sure to go to
tweeting and retweeting us.
Yep. Make sure to go to the website, theclicknation.com, and also go to Dirt's website, popculturenetwork.com.
Yay, please do.
Follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDogg98 and at TheClickNation. Roddy Cat is at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need. Agent 70 is at Agent_70. And Dirt is at PCN_Dirt.
Yay.
Yay.
We'll be back next week with episode 1 and starting a whole new season.
We're relaunching.
Like the TV shows. We went on a week hiatus for the holiday season, and now we're back better than ever.
Dun dun dun.
That's funny. Well, we're not going to 101. We're just going back to 1.
That was 101. Season 2, episode 101.
That's funny. That's funny.
And with that, we are the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Hey!